look through the window of the original Joe's on North Beach and you'll see two guys at the counter talking ball. Time for you to listen in to their conversation. Marty Lurie and the SF Chronicles' Bruce Jenkins are looking through the window of baseball. Sponsored by Original Joe's of North Beach and Westlake on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, a gorgeous Sunday around the Bay Area today, and probably a nice time to talk some ball with our good friend Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, how are you?
Morning, Marty. How are you?
Very good. You know, I'll tell you something. Watching this Ovechkin yesterday with the Stanley, I'll tell you something. Number one, I like the way the Stanley Cup ends where they shake hands. I like that. I think it's wonderful. I wish baseball could do that.
Yeah, especially because, you know, it's, at some point during the series, guys are just beating the hell out of each other.
Well, up to about 30 seconds before they shake hands.
Yeah.
They're killing each other. And then it's the most gentlemanly thing. And then they win and they get this cup. It's like goosebumps when they bring it out. And Ovechkin went crazy.
It's great. I mean, it's so great. They let him take it to the ballpark. You know, the thing gets a lot of mileage, but it is. It's really a terrific thing.
Yeah, and he loved it. And just, you know, he's one of those guys like Ernie Banks winning the World Series finally. You know, he's a longtime player, and he'd never gotten the cup, and he got it. And look, he shared it with everybody. Last thing I saw in the news last night, he was in the middle of some pool of water in the middle of Georgetown with the cup.
I'm not a big hockey guy, but I happened to be in New York covering basketball when the Rangers won for the first time in a million years, and I'm just sitting there with nothing to do, just to drink a couple beers and watch them actually win the Stanley Cup. What an amazing thing. Now, you got grown men, these big, tough-looking fans just in tears, and they're parading the cup around the ice. It's something I'll never forget.
Yeah, I liked it. I'm glad it was at the ballpark yesterday, and he got to throw out the first pitch. So he throws out the first pitch, and he hits the backstop.
A little high. Right. That's all right. Don't bounce it. That's the worst thing you can do.
And then he said, hey, give me another one. So they gave him the eagle was being, I don't know, the eagle mascot was out there or something. They gave him another one. He threw a strike into Scherzer. How about that?
If you're in D.C. and Ovechkin wants another one, you give him another one.
You give him another one. That's it. I tell you, it just was a great sports moment. I really liked it. Well, Scherzer today, Bruce, you know, we talk about pitchers and why can't everybody try to do this? Why? How come he's the only one that can do this?
Well, just guys aren't allowed to do it. You know, they're brought up the way it's going now. This pervades the minor leagues. You know, getting guys out of there. You know, before allegedly they hurt their arm and they're trained to go six innings, and they don't really know. They don't have any experience going six, seven, eight, nine. Or, you know, God, heaven help you, a complete game. I would bet there's a lot of guys who are capable of being a stud like Scherzer, who never get the chance. But you know, this is my favorite pitcher in all of baseball. God, he's so fun to watch. His stuff is just off the charts. But he's so animated out there. He loves the game. He can hit. He'll drop a bunt down for you. But the other day he got a pinch hit and then scored a tying run. I mean, he's a ball player and an entertainer, and he's just great.
Yeah, and he'll throw 95 or 98 in the first inning. He'll throw 98 in the ninth inning. In the ninth inning.
Yeah. Tremendous movement on the fastball, great breaking ball, and just a tremendous competitor. He's the guy you open a playoff series with and hopefully close it with the same guy.
And still, it's a baseball game. And again, with gambling coming up, and now on ESPN, when you look at the scoreboard, they give you the odds of the game. So I'm looking at it, and it's like 3-1, 300 to, you know. Yeah. And you never see – that was Koufax against the Mets in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, you never saw this before, and that's what it is today. And I said to myself, it's still a baseball game. Vita Blue, 1971. He was outstanding, but he still lost some games.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, Derek Holland. He's a lefty, so no Eaton in the lineup today, no Matt Adams to deal with. Maybe you neutralize Harper a little bit, and you figure out a way to score a couple of runs. Maybe you could beat the guy.
Yeah, it could absolutely happen. They get a good 4 or 5 innings from Holland, maybe get a lead, scratch across a couple of runs. Next thing you know, the bullpen takes over. It could happen. I tell you, I wouldn't bet anything on any game, any baseball game, really anything, but especially baseball at any time. I don't care if it's, you know, Koufax against Carlton Willie.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Carlton Willie or Joey J.
Yeah, one of those guys, Bob Buell.
Either one, or Ron Pache. That would be the other one. Very good. Hey, we had an author on today, and he talked about, I don't know if you remember, Roy Sievers, the name Roy Sievers.
Yeah, a big right-handed slugger for the Senators.
Yes, and he set all sorts of records for the Senators, and Calvin Griffith and Clark Griffith had the franchise back then. To hit it out in left field, you had to hit it like 440 feet, and they eventually moved it into 380, then 350. But this local team, the Washington Nationals, they've never recognized Roy Sievers, and he was the guy from the 50s. So we had an author on today, and his cause in life is to get them to recognize Roy Sievers.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his line here. Led the league in homers and RBIs in 57 for the Senators. Of course, they were terrible, but he was a good reason to come out to the park. He drove in over 100 runs four times. Just a real classic, big right-handed slugger.
Yeah, and Richard Nixon loved him. And they did. Richard, and there's an anecdote in the book where Tricia, right, his daughter,
yeah,
said, Dad, they should never trade Roy Sievers, even for Mickey Mantle.
Kind of like the Pirates fans feel about Ralph Kiner. If we don't have him, what do we got?
Yeah, and I thought it was a good kind of a time capsule of baseball in the 50s in those days. So I like the franchise. I'm a Nationals fan, so to speak. I like what they're doing. I like the fans. And I like the fact that they got Eaton in this lineup, Turner in the lineup. They got Harper, who hits the heck out of the ball, Rendon. They're a little better than I and they got the kid, the ninth.
Soto.
Yeah, how about that kid?
He's a really watchable kid, and I'm reading some stories about what a high character guy is, how he studies the game. He's not up there just to launch a home run every single time. You know, he can still change his swing with a situation. He can be patient, and he's a very good all-around player. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're so entertaining in a lot of ways between Scherzer and Soto and Harper and Turner. I mean, geez, it's just Turner. I'm sorry, tremendous. I felt bad when Dusty wasn't brought back, Dusty Baker. Yeah. But they're and they started terrible, and everybody's going, well, what would happen if Dusty were here? But all of a sudden, they're tied for the lead now, and then Washington is not going to stay with them.
Did you see Justin Miller?
Atlanta's not going to stay with him.
Did you see Justin Miller at all yesterday, the relief pitcher? I don't know if you got to see him. They brought him in the middle innings. Gio Gonzalez once again gets knocked out. If you put your pennant hopes on this guy.
Yeah, I would never do that.
Well, they did once against St. Louis, and he had a 6-0 lead, I think, and he lost the game.
Yeah, it was a deer in the headlights kind of thing.
Game five. But they brought in this guy, Justin Miller. And he's one of those relief pitchers. His shoulder, like, is closed up. It's like it's almost pointing towards the third base.
Yes, right, exactly.
And, Bruce, I'm telling you, he's the best relief pitcher I've seen all year. He's given up one hit the whole year. His whip is 0-1-1.
Yeah, and like you say, the way he sets himself up out there, you don't really see that. It's disconcerting for a hitter. You've got to see him two or three times before you really get it, and you're only going to really see him once, you know, in a month or two.
Yeah, it was pretty good yesterday. Let's talk a little bit about the Mets and what's going on there. And you know New York baseball, and, of course, you've been to New York many times. The Mets are in trouble. They've lost, I think, 8 in a row. They're not scoring any runs. They're now starting to talk about should the Mets trade Syndergaard and DeGrom. And there seems to be good arguments to have them do it because there's no farm system. And the players they have are not winning players, and they can't compete with Atlanta, Philly, or Washington. How about that, DeGrom and Syndergaard on the market?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of teams that think they've got a chance are going to be looking real hard at that. And, you know, there's talk about the Yankees, who have so much young talent, it's just ridiculous whether they give up a Gleyber Torres or an Andujar for one of those guys. I mean, if you do that for the Mets, if you were to get somebody like Torres or Andujar, those guys could step right in and be good players. But, you know, if they wound up being prospects, you imagine being a Mets fan, they're 8.5 out now. They're 7 under .500, and you trade one or both of your best pitchers for guys who aren't going to help you, and you sink all the way to the cellar. That in that town with the Yankees just dominating, that's pretty depressing. So I'd be careful with that. I mean, if the Mets were to get it all back together, those are two guys you want.
Yeah, you can't win without them,
right.
But can you win with them? That's the question. But you know,
so
Syndergaard.
Far, no.
Syndergaard is a little like Strasburg. You know, Syndergaard's one of those guys, every time you turn around, he's sort of on the DL.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him a lot of longevity. He's an awesome guy to watch, but there's so many guys like that. They throw hard. They're mind-blowing. You can't believe it. They get everybody out, and then, whoops, he's got a little tear in the elbow ligament, you know, and the next thing you know, he's out for months. He just strikes me as one of those kinds of guys. DeGrom, he's as good as anybody right now. He is really, really good, and he'd be I would put more money on him in the long haul.
Yeah, I would. And I think if he went to a team that needed a starting pitch. So we'll see as July comes around if the Mets are still floundering. You know, Sandy Alderson, you know Sandy.
Yeah.
You know, he's the Marine. In college, he went to Vietnam just to be a reporter to go to Vietnam. That's how tough Sandy Alderson is. But
very tough.
Is he going to give – I mean, would he – you know, he doesn't look like the guy who participates in fire sales.
No. He's very tough, and he's very ruthless. In 1982, when the Billy Martin thing went south with the A's, I think the owners are really reluctant to fire him because he'd been so popular. But I'll never forget Sandy Alderson was the guy who stepped in and did the job there. And people had barely heard of him. He wasn't a general manager. He was just coming up. But he was kind of the enforcer. He was the guy who, you know, told Billy what was going on, told the press. And it's like, wow, Sandy Alderson's dropping the hammer right here. And it was the day of Game 7 of the World Series between the Cardinals and the Brewers.
Wow.
Tough guy.
Yeah, very tough, very tough. So it'll be interesting to see how that thing plays out. There was a baseball moment last night in the Arizona-Colorado game where, of course, Goldschmidt right now somehow... What does he eat, spinach? Is he Popeye? Well, what happened here? Something happened to Goldschmidt, and he's gone nuts the whole week. Homers and homers, hit two more last night. So it comes up about the eighth or ninth inning. And the Colorado bullpen, which is completely imploded.
Disaster.
And, you know, Shaw can't get anybody out. He's throwing the ball all over the park.
Yeah.
So they bring Pounder. Yeah, he did. And he gave him a big error. Cost him a six-run inning. So they bring Pounders in, and Goldschmidt comes up, and he just plunks him. I mean, it's a fastball right in the back. I mean, you know. And, of course, Archie Bradley's yelling and screaming. And Goldschmidt actually had words with Tony Walters, the catcher that went to first base. But after the game, I love baseball. Pounder said, well, I was trying to throw an inside fastball, and it got away.
Yeah, Goldschmidt's going to be doing this for a while, I think. I'm not sure I want one of my key relievers to be named Pounders, but that's just me.
I know. Great. But today, just watch. What's going to happen now? You know, it's like, you know, we don't forget. We always remember.
Mm-hmm.
And Arenado's going to get one today. And it's so funny because the announcers were pretty good last night. They said, well, they're not going to retaliate now because they got to get one of the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you don't hit, you know, Tony Walters, you get Arenado or Story or somebody like that. So
yeah, that's the traditional way to do it. You don't always see that, though. Sometimes they'll just go get the very next guy. But that's getting pretty lively there. But, you know, that's a series that the Giants, you know, are watching. But I don't think they're just not terribly impressed by what's going down with either one of those teams. The pitching is so vulnerable. And, you know, good talent. Anytime you got Arenado and Goldschmidt, those teams are going to be in it. But running away from the Giants, I don't think so.
No. And look, I said it yesterday, and I know you and I chatted about it. I think they will win the division. I think they're the best team. But they need a number three hitter, the Giants. There's that element of I want the number three hitter to be Frank Robinson. I want him to be Willie Mays.
Nice.
I want him to be McCovey. I want the number three hitter to be a guy. When the number three hitter comes up, watch out. And I just can't buy into McCutchen and Posey in that three spot. I just can't do it.
I think McCutchen could be that guy, but he's got to, you know, he's got to show it. You see flashes. The bat speed is there. He still runs great. And he's a winner. He's all those things. But, you know, he has to do it over a period of time. But you're right. I mean, they don't have anybody in that slot. You know, Posey's a good hitter, but, you know, you lack a little more power. He's not really giving it to him consistently. So, yeah, but, you know, I mean, getting help is not that hard, but getting a number three hitter, that's very hard. I don't know if they have the capability of doing that.
No, they have hitters all over the lineup, but they don't have a number three hitter. They just don't have one, and that's one of the issues for me. They got hitters all over the place. They lead the league in hitting, and their on base is terrific. Slugging is very good, but it's that one guy when you flip the lineup to say, I don't want that guy to come up, and that's what I'm looking for. How about Nick Hundley? And he had a big home run yesterday.
Yeah, he's got a nice stroke. You know, he really does. He's been hitting the ball hard pretty consistently. I mean, what a backup catcher to have, a guy who can rake a little bit. He's obviously very good behind the plate. There was some doubt whether they'd bring him back this year, but it was a very smart move to do so. And, you know, maybe Joey Bart will be that guy before long. But right now, he's a really valuable guy.
Yeah, I think he is. I think their bench, you know, all of a sudden their bench is
pretty good, yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, you put Hanson in, you put Hundley in, Sandoval is on the bench. You could have Gorky's and or William or Pence. Pence, you know, his looks, what can I say? I mean, does he look any different? I guess maybe a little bit. But,
well, he looks structurally different because he's more upright, but he's still vulnerable to that low and away pitch. I saw him take a real good low and away one outside that I think he would have lunged at before, but then he did get swinging a pitch that was out of the zone, and he's getting beat on high fastballs occasionally. So I'm not sure about him, but he's a guy you pull for, that's for sure.
Yeah, I want to mention one other thing. You know the outdoor writer for the Chronicle.
Tom Sheetstra. He's the best there ever was at that job.
Isn't it amazing? I want to tell you, because I, you know, of course, I get the paper and I read the sports section, and I can't wait to get to his part. And I just picture him on a trail somewhere in the Marin Headlands, listening to us talking about baseball, because I think he's a baseball fan.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's unbelievable, really. I mean, that's a job that doesn't always give you a lot of colorful writing. When I was on the Chronicle desk in the 70s, we had a guy, every column was exactly the same. It was just, whether it was the deer or the bass fishing, or it was just, he kind of mailed it, and he could have been in Cuba, you know. And but Tom Steenstra, man, he's a great writer. He really gets out there. He reports. He totally loves it. He brings it back to you, and what a treasure.
I think he's unbelievable. He sleeps with mountain lions. I
mean, well, he does.
He does. I mean, honestly. And he won a big award, I think I saw today. There was a picture that he did, was the national winner of the greatest outdoor picture of the year, or something like that. So... I just want to.
He is a sports fan. He's every now and then he's in the office, and he's such a humble guy. He always, you know, wants to give Scott Osler and Killian some props, and he's just he's a real gem.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring it up because you know, he's a sportsman, and I what we do, and we talk for God, I talk for enough hours on the air, and I know I have a lot of people who hike and, you know, and all this, and I just could picture him listening to us and saying, "Yeah, Bruce, you're right." I just could.
Right, Bruce. Back to you.
All right, I can just see it. Well, next week we'll talk about the question you brought up yesterday, and sort of the Warriors parade is going to be this week. But looking at the Giants' accomplishment, the Warriors, the 49ers, and you brought up the Raiders, the A's, which one is the most dramatic? Do you have a gut reaction on it?
The most dramatic, well, I think, you know, what the NFL is king. I say that begrudgingly. It's not king for me, but it's king, you know, on the real side for the Bay Area and the nation. And I think what they did, you know, in the Super Bowls, going 5-for-5 and with a lot of drama, a lot of tension. Those weren't, some of them were routes, but they had some things that you never forget. That's right up there. And you know, the with the Raiders, it was more of a just every year they were, you know, they'd win 12, 13 games. Probably not enough Super Bowls for their liking. You know, for those of us who remember the A's in the mid-70s, those runs in those World Series were fantastic. And, you know, hell, the Giants postseasons in those three title years. So I'm basically answering your question by giving you all the... that's a tough one to answer. I mean, the Warriors probably are the least dramatic because they've been expected to win for the last couple of years.
Yeah, maybe 5-for-5.
5-for-5, I'll tell you.
That's tough to beat. But yeah. Then again, we go through this baseball, the playoffs, to win three World Series. It's one thing to even get in, but to win three in 5 years without the Hall of Famers, so to speak, you know, without the, you know, the Hampton Five kind of thing. Not easy to do.
And it didn't get old. To me, the Warriors aren't getting old, but you hear a lot about, well, this is, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of Durant. I'm, you know, of course they were going to win, whatever. But the Giants were never considered the best team in any of those years. And they'd get in the playoffs, and all of a sudden you've got this ongoing month-long, you know, series of games.
Yeah.
And you're starting to believe a little bit more. Next thing you know, they're in the World Series, and that's that was priceless. And you remember, there's so many little things you remember, you know, the games in Philadelphia or Texas. You know, I'll never forget being in Texas when Brian Wilson threw that final pitch, and the Giants had finally won.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
After all those years, they finally won it. You know, it was a strange place to do it, but
Great topic. Yeah, I like it. All right, I'll leave you with this one. Last on the post game, we came up with a bunch of crazy questions yesterday. But one was the best sign you've ever seen in a ballpark, and John France sent me one today. It says, August 1988, Wrigley Field, the first night game. The sign, last one to leave, please turn out the lights.
Remember that guy in New York at the Mets games in the 69 World Series? He had a sign for every occasion.
Everything. I don't care if he wanted a hot dog or bring in a relief pitcher, he had a sign for it.
Yeah,
that was funny. Yeah, I like the topic. So that was a good one. I thought that.
Yeah, that is. That'd be a good story to write. You take a lot of research, but
yeah, that's one for John Shea. We'll put him on that.
Absolutely.
All right, that's a John Shea story. All right. Hey, have a great afternoon, and Dodgers next weekend. So we've got a lot to look forward to this week.
Beautiful. We'll talk then.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. Have a good
Marty.
Afternoon. All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. More coming up.